This is Jamal Ford Robinson, and you are listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
How's that?
Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Rux Brooks, and Jim Harley this evening. We will be getting on to two successive victories for Gloucester Rugby. It's not been often we could say that. Well, I suppose twice this season. We will be talking about the win in Edinburgh, the win at Castra, against Castra, I should say, at the weekend, plus the fallout and shock of the departure of Luis Rizamit. But we'll start this week with the now confirmed knockout stages for Challenge Cup and Champions Cup. But we'll just, before we get into the actual games themselves, just confirm that the whole format of this competition, or both competitions, are absolutely farcical. They couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery. And seriously, just make it as simple as possible and let the fans freaking do this, because it's an absolute joke. Anyway, right. So,
yeah, Lawrence Dallaglio just said on TNT about how it's really interesting that there are five repeats in the Champions Cup.
No.
Yeah,
not
that's
at all.
Right.
That's not interesting.
I love watching the same game.
That all those Leicester fans get to go back to Dublin that they've just come back from. That's not good. It's not interesting. It's shit.
Yeah. Well,
there we go. That's my piece.
to be fair, though, Leicester played at home against Leinster, so they'll just get to go and get hammered in Leinster.
Yeah, but it's just repeated. No, yeah, it's just repeated. And nobody wants to play the same team again.
Yes, I agree. So let's just confirm everything. So Gloucester will be playing Castra again, which is just farcical in itself. The other grit ties, in the Challenge Cup are Sharks versus Zebra, Edinburgh versus Bayonne, Montpellier versus Ulster, Clermont Cheetahs, Benetton Lions, Poe Connacht, and Ospreys Sale. If Gloucester win their last 16 get tie against Castro, we will be at home against the winners of Ospreys and Sale Sharks. And then again, should we be successful, we would be in the semi-final, and again would be playing at home. But that's a long way ahead. It is ridiculous. We've just beaten Castra, and we'll come on to the actual game in a bit. But playing them again in the next round is just farcical, isn't it?
I just don't understand what happens. What's wrong with copying football and being like, right, these are your teams who are going into the home pot. You can do that quite easily, and going, now we're going to draw who they play out of the away teams. It's hardly fucking rocket science, is it, really?
Well, you just have caveats that you have your seeding, unless that means you're playing the same team, in which case you'll play, like, in our case, if we're, I don't know, are we first or second seed?
We're second seed. If we'd been first seed, we'd have played Zebra. But even in that, inherent in that problem.
I mean, the thing is, as has come up, you know, in the Exeter game, you know, jump into the Champions Cup now, it was like, well, if we get beaten better, we'll have Bath at our place rather than La Rochelle. I mean, it's just, if you've got like the two-time champions that have had, to be fair, some horrendous refereeing decisions that cost them a couple of games, so they're having to do an away round of 16. And it means that, you know, oh, well done, you've done really well. You get to play La Rochelle. It's kind of...
It's almost
go to a panel, and a panel decide what the games are going to be or something, you know.
Well, I mean, you don't have repeats. The other issue is the fact that Gloucester have not lost a single game. All right, we haven't got the bonus points, the Sharks finished on the same number of points because of bonus points, losing bonus points, right? And that meant, surely though, that would mean the team that's won more games should be the first seed. Sharks lost the game and they are number one seed.
Oh, but there's...
I get it, Ed.
Been over it, though, that before. The whole tournament is a joke in terms of how it's set up. You've got teams going... So each team only plays four times. you've got teams through the last round of games, they've lost 50% of their matches, but they're deemed good enough to be in the knockout stages of a European competition that is supposed to be determining who the elite side are. So you could have a side now that do go on a run, but you're like, you were absolutely rubbish, bang average in the groups, and now you get a run. It's just, do you know, that what was wrong with the old format of pools of four, play each other home and away, so that you had to be the best in your group and you could work it out beyond that. You know, I mean, that was always an exciting format.
It's even more farcical in the Champions Cup, as Jim was mentioning, though. So Toulouse versus Racing, Leinster versus Leicester, which happened this weekend, reversed. Northampton versus Munster, which happened this weekend, but reversed. Bordeaux versus Saracens, which happened last week. Harlequins Glasgow, Bulls Lions, Stormers La Rochelle, which happened, has already happened, and Exeter Bath. I think Bulls Leon has also happened, isn't it? So there's only half of the games in the last 16 have already happened in the Champions Cup. It's just a joke. Anyway, I mean, I think we've had enough moaning and whinging about how useless the EPCR are, but I mean, just seriously, it isn't that hard, guys. There are simpler ways to make this a far more interesting and exciting tournament.
Quite understand why they didn't go back to that pools of four, three games.
Well,
three
the
home
rumors
three
are
games.
The rumors are there is a return to that next season.
I don't know why they didn't do it this year.
This season, no,
you know,
I know.
COVID was done. That was surely the only hangover, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. The World Cup, maybe. That might have been the only thing this year with the World Cup because of the condensed schedule. But I agree. I think the fans don't like this format. It doesn't encourage any the competitiveness in the pool stage is diminished because you can, as you say, Russ, basically go to Leinster, put a crap side out, get hammered and still qualify, like Gloucester did last year, fair play to us. It's just pointless, really. Overall, what's, you know, why bother with half the fixtures? I mean, fair play to them. We'll come on to some of the games in a bit, but you know, Northampton have gone full bore in every game, and pulled off some great wins. But like, you know, it's just Leicester Bray basically knew it didn't matter what team they put out against Leinster, they were almost certainly going to qualify for the next round. So why risk it when you've got a Premiership game next week? You know, it's not good. Right. We'll move on to the Gloucester games first of all. So we'll talk about Edinburgh first. I went, and apologies, we didn't have a pod last week, but I didn't have a voice till Thursday. Overexuberant celebration on my part. Russ, you've already mentioned you didn't see a huge amount of the game. You were unable to see it, but you've seen highlights, etc.
Yeah.
Jim, how much of the game did you watch?
I listened to the first half. Well, no, I listened to the first quarter on the radio, and then I watched the rest on my phone because I couldn't get the Viaplay working on my telly because of VPN issues and all sorts of other things that you need to have running to be able to watch rugby these days. It was just pretty similar to this weekend, really. You know, a good win, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think we'll come on to the Castro game in a bit, and I think there are some more positives from the Castro game than the Edinburgh game. Just personally, I thought it was great to grind out a win. We were average for the majority of the Edinburgh game. There was about 10 minutes of good rugby, and we saw a fantastic try by Luis Rizamet, which we'll come on to later as well. I thought Zach Mercer was superb. Jack Clement got a bit unlucky, I think, in some of the penalties he conceded. But he got player, you know, he got man of the match at the end of the game, but he was a bit unlucky in the first half, particularly with some penalties. But, you know, look, we would have been cried out for a similar win against Bath or against Northampton or Exeter earlier in the year when those on our continuing league run of poor results. So overall, you've got to be happy with a win. My frustration, Jim, at the time and during the game, though, was I felt we were so passive against Edinburgh. that we allowed them basically to be in that game when they probably shouldn't have been.
Yeah, I think we are sometimes just painfully cautious, and we, you know, we kind of hark back to the game plan and the box kicks, etc. But yeah, we just seem to be, you know, hamstrung a little bit, and not willing to take the counter attack opportunity, or, you know, have a chance. And modern rugby, you absolutely have to, you have to be willing to risk a little to gain a lot, and we don't seem to be wanting to risk anything.
No, I thought that, you know, there was, as I said, there were some positives from the game. I mean, the first thing I should say, actually, and it was echoed significantly more so this week, but the scrum looked really good. It was quite funny, before the game there was an Edinburgh fan sat in front of me who was extolling the virtues of the Edinburgh front row, suggesting it not only was the Scottish front row but potentially was also the Lions front row, which gave me much amusement after they had their heads up shoved up their arses very quickly in the first scrum. It doesn't matter how many times you shout "shoo," if he runs the ball into contact, if he can't scrummage, it's rather pointless. So that was quite entertaining. And then overall, Edinburgh, I mean, just want to say, as for Gloucester fans who travelled up, I mean, wow. I think probably the biggest Gloucester crowd I've seen at a European away game, maybe since Limerick. Sort of non-finals, of course, we're talking here. Absolutely incredible support. I'm gonna put it out on a limb and I say maybe over 2,500, maybe slightly less, but it was a lot of Gloucester fans, a lot of noise, in a very compact stadium. And I think they could have put more posts in their gym. I'm not sure about you. I don't know if you saw the footage. There were quite a lot of posts on the stands. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, there was a couple of people tweeted, you know, I think the club tweeted, you know, turning the city cherry and white and all that, and going, oh, there's only a picture of four people. But yeah, it definitely looked and sounded like there was a huge travelling support. And I think, to be honest, any European game that you can easily drive to.
Yeah.
So, you know, Wales, Scotland,
Northern France.
Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're gonna travel en masse too. You know, the Toulouse and the La Rochelles and stuff that are a bit more of an epic drive or flights required. Those flights shoot up in price very, very quickly, don't they? So it's a lot more difficult for people to decide to go last minute. And obviously with the amount of hotels in Edinburgh, it was something. I mean, I was still toying with coming along right up until the last minute. It was really good to see, actually. And I've spoken to lots and lots of people that were there, and they all had a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. And a couple of notes on Edinburgh itself. Obviously, ridiculously cold. For those who haven't been before, that's my third time up there. Hilly. So if you're struggling with your hip or your knees or whatever, don't attempt it. There's a lot of hill walking. But overall, you know, incredibly friendly. I mean, you just kind of forget sometimes that not all capital cities or big cities, you know, tourist cities, have to be evil and horrible like London and Paris. You can actually be friendly to people. And I thought that the welcome that Gloucester fans got in the city generally, but also at the ground, was really lovely. And it was nice. I thoroughly enjoyed my time up in Edinburgh. It was a really nice time. And just on that note about the number of supporters, I think it also helped that our other European game this year was so inaccessible. It meant that people didn't have to make that choice. So you had Georgia or you had Edinburgh. It was a bit of an easy decision to make. So, you know, although, let's be honest, I think we probably would have preferred Claremont, if we're being honest here. Anyway, right, moving on to the Castres game this weekend. Russ, again, I know you haven't seen a huge amount of it, but you've seen the extended highlights at this point. So I'll let you just give your initial thoughts on the, you know, it was a fairly statement victory in an otherwise poor season.
Yeah, Castres, I don't think they were a typical French side, weren't they? From what I saw, in it for a while, tired by the end, but you know, you can only play what's in front of you, which is probably what most teams think when they play us these days, to be fair. So you've got to take it when you can get it.
Yeah.
Looked like we played some quite nice rugby at times. Freddie Clark's proved he can play football.
Get him in the English. Great finish.
There were some nice offloads, which we haven't seen much of. It looked, you know, I'm very hard to tell off of like 8 minutes of highlights, but we did what we needed to do. Just be nice if we could take some of this form into the Prem now and try and kick on a little bit. You know, that hope always is, I think, isn't it, is that we can now translate that and get the season going a bit. But we've been here before with Europe, haven't we? So remains to be seen. So, you know, for me, what people have told me, the limited highlights I've seen, hearing it on the radio, all quite difficult to get a fair and accurate gauge from, you know, deliberately being kind to the club because I just don't know. I just want to see some of what we're doing carry over back into the Premiership now and just try and get something out of this season. But
yeah,
Europe looks good. Potential draw, which we didn't talk about too much. We've got quite a good run if we get through the quarters. Ospreys or Sale could be quite tricky, I think, in the quarters. That's almost like the worst. If we get past that, I don't think there's many teams based on how we're playing in Europe, which is a weird thing to say. I think all the games are winnable, which again is a weird thing to say on how we are, but that just shows how well we're doing in Europe. I saw a weird stat, which is like, is it since for over a year, where if you take out the Premiership, we're unbeaten in every competition we've played in, which is just bloody weird.
Yeah, so since La Rochelle, we are unbeaten in non-Premiership games. So I think we're now 9-9.
Which is such a weird stat, isn't it, when you compared to everywhere else. And I think that's the frustration. And obviously, we all recognise that we have played weaker opposition probably overall than we play in the Premiership. That obviously has an impact. But we obviously can play, like Jim said, sometimes, you know, it does feel very negative, very defensive. We're very conservative. And then we'll play games like this and you can see what we can do. And you're kind of like, can we just find an identity and play that way? Why not have a go in Europe, in the Premiership, sorry, and try and play in the same way? Because let's be honest, the game plan in the Premiership's not getting us anywhere, is it? So that's where I'm at, I think.
No, it's a good point. And actually, I'll come on to Jim in a second, but it was very obvious on Friday night. We started and finished. So our first 20 and our final 20 were playing rugby, which caused cast problems. We were competing at the breakdown. We were actually getting attacking from depth and at pace, putting support players around ball carriers. When we were kicking, it was progressive kicking. So it wasn't from a box kick. It was out of hand, trying to get behind the Castro player and put them pressure under on the line out or make them then have to clear an exit and then we're in their half. It was a far more balanced style of rugby and a more enjoyable watch. The middle 40 was absolutely archetypal Skivington ball for most of this season. It was headless chicken stuff. After three phases, we had absolutely no idea what we were doing. Passing the ball for the sake of passing it, that's something I've not really noticed until the last couple of games. But we're not passing it to create space. We're just kind of passing it really almost because we don't know what we're going to do with it.
Can I just add, don't call it Skivington ball, call it Skivington ball. Otherwise, okay. I quite like that as a saying. I think it works well.
Skivington ball.
I think I think that's the frustration we all feel, isn't it?
That box kicking for the sake of box kicking. And again, really passive in defence, not competing in the breakdown. Castro had a lot more opportunities with the ball. And it was really mainly because Castro couldn't catch a cold on Friday night. Alongside Jim, probably the most dominant front row performance I think I've seen from Gloucester in at least the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I did quite like Jamal's response as he was getting his first ever Player of the Match award.
Absolutely superb.
He was saying that, oh yeah, sounds like a great shift to me, getting subbed after 30 minutes. referring to his opposition props. They were lucky, really, that they got hooked when they did, because they would both have been sin-binned, I think, for their inability to be able to stay up. It was a joke, really, how poor they were. I mean, we got a pretty good scrum, but I didn't think our scrum was that amazing.
Yeah.
And to go, you know, a team that are in the top half of the top 14, you would expect them to be able to scrummage. So that was wonderful. And the fact that, you know, the other guys came on and they shored it up a little bit, but then we were still dominant after that first, maybe the first 10 minutes after they'd come on, sort of the end of the first half, they shored it up a bit. But then second half, it was, we were back to being quite dominant.
Well, I did shout out from the grandstand that after the captain got warned in the second half, I did suggest, maybe tongue in cheek, that they should sim bin one of the replacement props so we can get one of the rubbish ones back on again. But I mean, it wasn't just Jamal got that man of the match, because not only because of the incredible performance he did in the scrum, and I actually have to say to Jamal, in relation to Jamal, he's been doing that most of the season as well. He's been very good in as loose head. I think that's probably his best position in the scrum. But the other area that I thought he was excellent in was his carrying and his tackling as well. You know, he's not necessarily known as a big ball carrier, but he did. There were a couple of really important carries where he really just pushed us forward, gave us a bit of forward momentum, and that was a really important part of the game as well. And I did like also his comment about the fact that, you know, he puts 80 minutes of, or 70 minutes of grunt and does a lot of good work, and then Freddie Clark steals the show with a absolute wonder try.
Bit of a toe poking, yeah.
But, I mean, like, there's all this stuff about, you know, basically comparing with Paul Gascoigne's goal against Scotland in 1996, and he's, other than the finish, it was not far off. It was just absolutely,
I mean,
ridiculous.
If he'd have smacked into the back of the net in rugby, his finish would be appalling, wouldn't it? But I heard a few people say, did he mean to do the chip over? Well, we'll probably never know, will we? I think he did.
He stretched out the finish, and he stretched out the foot. He was definitely.
I mean,
that
finish was superb, and he's done that before, hasn't he? His try against La Rochelle was ridiculous. He finished in the corner like he was a winger. I think, going back to the scrum, that's another frustration for me, though, because someone showed, there was a load of stats, and I think I shared it, going on about how our scrum stats are really good, but actually, on the whole, they're meaningless, because the scrum for Gloucester, and it's so weird as a Gloucester fan, is we put the ball in, we hook it, and it goes out. We don't use the scrum to get any kind of dominance in the game. I can't remember the last time we got a penalty from having a dominant shove on. And I really
that was what was lovely about this weekend. We recognised that this is a way to get territory and penalties.
But that's what I mean, Ed, and that's what really frustrates me. It seems it's a clear tactic of us, isn't it? It's like, right, we're not messing around with the scrum. You get the ball in, you get it out. And you're thinking, if we are a side that is box kicking, is dominating and playing territory, it's an easy way. And we have clearly got, we haven't got the best, I wouldn't say we've got some of the best props in the world, but we have got a good pack that a few seasons ago was a dominant shoving scrum. And I just find it really weird that that's gone away. And it's again, a game that shows that we could do that. We have that about us. And I think that's what I find annoying about Europe. It's really nice to see us do better, but then it's also really infuriating because you kind of think, why not?
Why weren't we doing this before? Just to play devil's advocate and be a bit of a party pooper, there are caveats to the Castro win. Number one, not knowing top 14 rugby particularly well, but I from what I understand of those who do, that wasn't Castro's, shall we say, best 15.
No, they've got Clermont at home next week.
Oh, yeah. they're a typical.
So for them, they are going to be looking at next week, aren't they? There, I think are they sixth?
They're all right, but
eighth or ninth. So that's a game that they feel that they must win.
I mean, French teams are weird, aren't they? They either care about Europe, and when they really really care, or they couldn't care less. And Castro seems to be
in seventh at the moment, so just outside the playoffs.
They don't seem to be a side that care about Europe, do they? So yeah, I get your point, Ed.
But it's weird because you look at this. I'm looking at the table now, right? And you say so. Racing atop with Bordeaux, and you've got Stade Toulouse, Toulon, Pau, Castro in seventh, just outside the playoffs, and then Montpellier, who looked like they were ordered on to be top seed and then kind of threw it away over against Benetton. They're bottom, Montpellier, with 16 points. Big spending Montpellier as well, I should say. That's Altraz money. That's Altraz money there. So, you know, it's the French league's a very interesting league anyway, generally, because of the competitiveness of it all. But yeah, it did strike me the second half particularly. It got to about 60 minutes and Castro did look like they wanted to be on the first flight out of there. And as quickly as possible. And it's so difficult now because we've got them in the last 16 and you just don't know which Castro is going to turn up. Are they going to send the same side? Are they going to send a more competitive 15? I just don't know.
Or an even weaker one.
or even a weaker one, yeah. You know, it is interesting. I mean, I'm looking at their sort of squad and there aren't many names that immediately jump out at me and going, oh, okay, they weren't playing today. So I don't know. It's difficult to judge. It could just be that, to be fair, they are, you know, they've got a decent side. They win probably a lot of games at home and playing them. They probably, my gut feeling is typical French side, last 16 of Europe in the non-important cup, they might not bother. Which would be lovely for Gloucester.
I'd take being a side that wins their home games, and it's funny, isn't it? I'm kind of like we're deriding this team that's half about in the league, and I'm kind of thinking, can we be that team? Can we be like that?
Yeah, I know it is weird, isn't it? Just one final thing on the Castro game. I don't know. Just. There were little bits in that game where I thought, oh, do you know what? There's little seeds of play and connections and things like that. And you think, could the Sale game, could we see a win against Sale? That's this weekend come in. Sale are going, got pretty good guns in the Premiership, but got a bit of a hammer.
I think,
they had a full strength side against La Rochelle.
This is also the Sale team that did all right when they travelled over to South Africa as well. And it's hard to know. It's hard to know because if we revert to type, you'd expect Sale to make life hard for us. And I'm going to bring it back. I'm sure Loz won't mind this. One of Loz's frustrations that he was saying in our discussion before we started recording, and obviously he can't make it, is that he doesn't see any progress at all. And I think where I get frustrated is I could see how I kind of take his point. You know, it's, we all know they're going to seem to see the same game plan. My frustration is I think, and I know Snowy makes this point a lot, I think we could beat most teams with the side we've got if we're at full strength, if we played the right game plan and the players just did their basics well and stuff. And like, I think pretty much every try I've seen a score in Europe from the highlights, and that's all I can bet. That's quite a nice work try. Oh, that was nice. Like the first, Seb Atkinson's in the corner.
It's a great try.
That was a really, really well worked try. And that's my frustration, because if we could maintain that, like you said, Ed, if no one can maintain playing rugby at that level for 80 minutes. But if we could just do it longer than we do, we'll be in more games than we are.
Yeah,
because I think we're making chances, And I think that's something we've moaned about, isn't it? That we're making chances, and then we're just not finishing them. And now, well, we've got the bonus point, didn't we? This weekend, so we can look at it and go, well, actually, we probably could have scored six or seven, but we scored enough to get the bonus.
I mean, my frustration is always has always been, I don't think we've got a bad squad. And I think the frustration is, I don't think we're delivering to the sum of our parts. And that's what always frustrates me is I've been a fan of Gloucester long enough that to accept sometimes we've had not very good sides, but you can see they're trying hard and you used to get behind them because you believe that they were doing their very best. I think that's one of the biggest frustrations from this group of players is because I don't think we've seen their best for a long time. And that's where it gets hard, isn't it? When you're kind of like, I just wish we could see you all. Go back to La Rochelle game again, which was a freak. And I'm not saying that, but even somewhere near that level of performance for a decent amount of time, and you're going to beat most teams in the Premiership. That's what frustrates me, I think.
Yeah, agreed. No, so let's be fair. Overall, two wins in two games, topped our pool, second seed, despite the obvious flaws and failings of the system that we should be first seed. We've got now, if we win all our games, we've got home last 16, home quarter, home semi onto Tottenham, and what the glamour of Tottenham will be, but all of that. So lots of positives from that. Let's hope that we can take that into the next weekend. And next, we will start by talking about a superb and really, really important win for Gloucester Hartbury Women. And then on to the shock decision by Lewis Rees-Zammit to leave Rugby Union.
Hi, I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Right then, this weekend, not only did Gloucester win on Friday night, but Gloucester Hartbury had a really important game and a big game at home, Kingsham, I should say, against Saracens. And Jim, you were there. And what a great victory. What a brilliant performance, particularly going down to 14 players after, was it 50 minutes?
I was really, really pleased. I was quite nervous beforehand, kind of, it's almost certainly the way Bristol and Exeter have looked so far this season, who I think are probably the two other, top sides. Saracens, well, they hadn't dropped a point, and their points difference was like, I think Gloucester's is about 100 and theirs is about 280. Like, they have been annihilating teams. They have been doing really, really well. Bonus point every game. And I thought, yeah, okay. This is going to be the final. We need to win the home game to at least give us confidence. We can, you afford to lose the away game, much like we chose to field a weakened side against Exeter in our final league game last season, and go through with a home semi, etc. But then I looked at the Saracens squad and I thought, there's only a couple of players in that squad that I'm kind of nervous of, and actually, that's quite an old. They're an old squad, Saracens, and they looked slow, and they looked very tired in that second half. And as you said, Ed, Kelsey Jones got the red card for. I haven't actually seen the replays. So I'm going to fire it up on the TNT video after we've recorded just to watch it because. Certainly, from my perspective, looking at the big screen, the same as the referee was, I could not see any head-on head. I could see a head in front of a head, but I couldn't see head-on head contact in the tackle. And obviously, that's what you need for your foul play and your red card. So, whether it all came from the TMO who had a different angle that wasn't on the big screen, I don't know. But you would assume a game that is somewhat in the balance with 30 minutes to go. Saracen's men are fantastic for it. Just turning it on. Right, now we go. Now we blow the opposition away. We go through the gears. We up the speed. We make it such that the opposition can't keep up. And actually, Gloucester looked the better side with the player down. They controlled the ball fantastically well. Very, very clever with a lot of the kick in. I mean, Cleakey and Emma kick in. They can probably kick the ball 50% further than anyone on the Saracens team, probably 50% further than most of the league. They've got the biggest boots. They're getting the greatest distances. I mean, and that was the conversions. I mean, Saracens scored a few tries in the corners, and the conversions didn't even make the posts. It wasn't like they were missing. They weren't even making the posts, which, you know, is an unfortunate reality with a lot of the women goal kickers. They struggle to get that much distance on the ball, whereas Singer, she'll just slot it from the touchline regularity. Yeah.
She has to a lot, because we score a lot of drives out in the corner.
Yeah, we have scored a lot out wide, and you know, it's a real shame. You know, it's a real shame for someone to score a hat trick and then get a red card, and probably nullify any opportunity of getting player of the match. But Sam Monaghan, I thought, was fantastic. The line out was a real plus for Gloucester Hartbury. You know, we stole a lot of their line out, a lot. And ours were rock solid. To be fair to Saracens, their driving maul was impressive last season. It's been impressive this season. And when they did win the line out and they got their maul going, it was very strong, hard for us to stop. A little bit disappointed that maybe the referee didn't go for the penalty try in the first, with the first score. I think probably because we just about scored it, he meant, I'll just award the try and not give the penalty try yellow card. But it was kind of one of those things. And Cecilia at the other end, obviously they didn't score and she ended up in the bin. But it was a really, really good game, and one that should be just a massive, massive shot in the arm for the girls, because they'll be like, well, we won't be making mistakes like getting a red card again.
No,
you would hope. And I honestly believe if it wasn't for that red card, we'd have probably widened the gap. I mean, it was nice that they didn't get the bonus point, so it was a 5-0. Yeah. Obviously, we haven't played that Sale game that was postponed because of the lack of ambulance, so we're still one game down on them, and therefore 1 point below them in the table. But again, that kind of just keeps us maybe a little bit under the radar, even as reigning champions, and takes maybe a little bit of the pressure off. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Champions Cup, and we're away at Saracens that same weekend. So I'm quite tempted. I think if we do get to the final, it will be a good weekend of Champions Cup, Challenge Cup.
Well, it's North London, isn't it? So it's there is still the rumour, of course, that there might be some sort of Women's Champions Cup game that weekend anyway. But obviously the complication is the Gloucester Saracens game that weekend. So that does complicate things a little bit, but we'll see.
But I can honestly see, off the back of that result, I can quite honestly think that Gloucester could go unbeaten this season. And I've said it now, but I don't think any other team in the league will trouble us.
The depth is incredible, though. I mean, you saying the fact that the girls were, you know, a lot of the girls were in the
shed.
In the shed.
Yeah.
You know, supporting them. And I think that shows, we've mentioned this before, that the togetherness of the women's squad is significant. There's a lot of players that that come in and out of that side. There's a lot of younger players, so when they play in the cup competition, they generally will try and prioritize that as a development side, and play some of the players that may be on the fringes and some of those up and coming players. And I think it definitely gives the squad that whole feel for, you know, this is a journey together. We are going to be looking at
doing something special here. And it's just, it's brilliant. I think it's great for the club. It's a shame that the crowd wasn't as big as I think it probably could have been. The weather probably didn't help. And I think also, it's one of those difficult things with the season ticket. If you've bought a Gloucester Hartbury season ticket and you get entry into King's Home, that's brilliant. But I think you raised this, Jim, that additional tickets, etc., you know, you've got these booking fees and things like that. And I do wonder, there's not a huge amount of extra stuff for season ticket holders in the men's season ticket. You know, just even saying to them to the men's team season ticket holders, look, this game's we're going to include this game on your season ticket.
It's £1.50 booking fee per ticket, which is a Ticketmaster thing. And when it's £5 for a ticket,
that's a lot of money.
You know, that's quite a bit extra. I mean, you can go to the ticket office and you can buy it and not pay it, but to do it online and get it digitally, which the majority of people are kind of be organised and try and do, I know Snowy has talked about this in the past, that, you know, that is just what these companies will charge, because they kind of run the whole ticketing system and, you know, where the seats are allocated and all that sort of thing as well. But looking around the ground, I did wonder whether there were more people than you'd normally get at Hartbury. It's quite hard to judge because it's obviously a much, much bigger stadium.
It's a bigger stadium, yeah. It's difficult to judge.
But, you know, I wouldn't say it was a massive crowd. And that was slightly disappointing, especially, you know, considering the capacity that they had for the final last year, and the regular attendance they get at the Hartbury Stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Right, we will now move on to a chat about something I don't think is underestimation to say was a bit of a shock. And that was that Lewis Rees-Sammet is leaving Gloucester. That wasn't the shock, because we all kind of expected that. But it's not only that, he's leaving rugby and heading to the US of A and to try his hand at American football. I think it's fair to say that Snowy in particular has expressed his being quite dismissive of this. And I kind of agree with him that the chances that Louis is going to do anything and uproot trees and succeed is slim. It's an incredibly difficult transition to make from rugby to American football. But he's 22. He's as fit as anything. He's quick. He's got, he's a strong lad. He's one of the best young talents in rugby union. If anyone's going to do it, it probably would be Louis, but it's a lot of big stretch. First of all, Russ, I think I saw the news literally 20 seconds after it broke on Twitter, and I was like, right, this is happening. What was your initial thought when you saw it?
Well, you saw my tweet, I think, because I picked it up straight after you, because for a change I was doing Sweet FA at work. So I saw your tweet.
I should say, I was on lunch at the time.
Yeah, I was also on lunch, so yeah. And I think I put, wow. I mean, I thought this season couldn't get any more insane or bizarre. And like you, I've kind of been enjoying having Lewis Rees-Sammet play for us while he has, because I kind of thought there's no way we're keeping him. 25 cap rule probably opens up the market for France for someone just to go to pay silly money for him.
Yeah.
And he rightly would deserve that. You know, I see a lot of derogatory comments about Louis. He's not
from the Welsh.
So let's call it
our
fans saying, he doesn't try hard enough. He's not interested. Then he goes and does what he did against Edinburgh, which no one else, certainly in our squad, could do, and very few people in rugby could do that, where they don't see the ball all game and at the flick of a switch turn it on its head. It was a ridiculous try. I mean, what a way to finish a rugby career. But we didn't know. So then I was accepting he was going, but wow, I was not expecting to lose him middle of the season and out of the blue. And all those people who said they saw this coming, It's hilarious for a start. I think, yeah, fair enough. You saw him go off to America, or your mate Billy Bob spoke to his great uncle Angus or whoever, and he's been training American football. He wants to live his dream. None of us saw him leaving now. And it's honestly, like in hindsight, it's hard to take, because he is one of the few bright sparks in that team, isn't he? You know, how many times has he turned a game on its head where you're like, this game just needs a spark. It needs something. And he does it out of nothing. Other than Simpson Daniel, I can't remember us having a player like it. And he had the potential to be better. Now, all credit to him. If this is his dream to go and play American football and break it, all power to him. It's his life, his choice. If he wants to go, like you said, Ed, he's young, now's the time to do it. No one has ever done it before. No one has ever broken from rugby into it. Could he do it? Possibly. But I don't think a lot of people, and I'm a casual fan of NFL. There are friends, we know people.
Yeah,
know
my brother-in-law's are massive, massive NFL fans.
But it is not an easy sport to break into. It is difficult, it is intricate, and he could go and do special teams returns, you know, kick returns, and he could make a career of it. But that's it's very hard to get into an NFL squad.
Well, it's interesting because he the way, from my understanding and what he said, he wants to be a wide receiver.
And let's, so again,
which is, I mean,
it's a very hard sport. I think people see it and think, oh, you just do what you're told. But they've been doing what they've told since for years. It's a lot of learned behavior. It's very hard to run their lines. It's all very intricate, way more clever than like a Luddite like me would ever understand the intricacies of. It's all against him. And he isn't getting a lot of money to go and do this. So,
no,
all right.
He'll be taking a pay cut initially.
Massive. All power to it. If he breaks it, he's made for life.
$20 million a year.
I think exactly. He, you know, fair play to him. And if he, let's be honest, if it doesn't work out for him, he can name his price when he comes back to rugby.
Yeah, moving on to that bit, Jim. So, you know, he's 22, right? And as wrestler, I think the expectation is he'll do a Christian Wade. He'll get picked up, maybe on a couple of practice squads, play a couple of practice games. Could be on like an injury list or squad, etc. And then maybe in 2-3 years time, come back to rugby union, better for the experience. But it's kind of a no-brainer, like gamble-free gamble, if you know what I mean, Jim.
Oh, absolutely. He's, you know, if he's been sensible, he'll have saved a bit over the last couple of years when he's been earning, you know, a decent salary. So I don't know whether do you get paid when you do this trial-y thing?
Yeah, so I think it's something like 8,000.
Is it like NFL Europe or pay for him or something?
The problem is it's not particularly clear, because again, American football is one of the most complicated games or sports to understand in terms of pay, let alone anything else. But it's all kind of set out. So my understanding is something around $8,000, I want to say, a month.
Like a coat.
Which is, yeah, doable. And then there is, you basically, depending on where you get, if you get like picked up by a team, there are then additional payments. So I think Christian Wade in his final year at the Bills was earning $400,000 a year.
It's hardly a hardship, is it?
No, I mean,
yeah. for not really playing. So I think,
well, that's the other thing. Yeah.
For Louis' situation, and like, you know, as we sort of mentioned, his dad was a massive fan, and it's been something that he's obviously been thinking about, you know, for a long time. And you know, you could say, you know, the Super Bowl's the biggest final in world sport.
You could say, but you're not right. But it's fine.
Well, okay, like football World Cup, yeah, whatever.
Champions League final.
Yeah. There's a lot of people interested in it. You know, most of them are American.
Most of them are American.
But
yeah.
There are a lot of people interested in it. Yeah. But I think, you know, for him, it, like you say, it's a no-brainer. You go into it, and you just have a go, don't you? And if he catches a break and impresses some people and gets himself a contract, and then, you know, he proves himself that he can do that role, And yeah, we all think he's got a much better chance than Christian Wade did, and Christian Wade didn't do too badly. And now look at him, he's scoring tries for Racing. So
yeah, exactly.
I think, and he was 27. So, so Zamit's the perfect age for it, really. You know, he can go, he can get some great Instagrams and all the rest of it on his travels.
Yeah.
And if it like you said, 20 million a year, if he manages to get in, he can live the life of a NFL star. And if after 2 or 3 years it doesn't work out for him, then I don't think he'll be coming back with his tail between his legs. No. He'll just come back and he'll come back and pick up a very lucrative contract with a very good top side, and probably walk straight back into the Wales team. You know, if they'll have changed their rules, because he probably won't be playing in Wales, will he? Let's be honest, he'll be in France.
Well, he's got his 25 caps.
He's got his 25. That's what I mean. I think, and that's. I think we'd already resigned. For that reason, I always thought he was going. I just thought we'd get the season out of him. I think the frustration is all of this is about great opportunity for Louis Rees Zamit. Brilliant chance for him to go, and he's got nothing to lose. You feel like, as a fan of Gloucester, is going, meanwhile, in Gloucester, we're sat here sucking our thumbs going, we've lost this winger who is probably the only winger in our game plan who can stand on the wing, do nothing, touch the ball once and turn the game on his head. We've lost...
Well, look, let's be blunt about this. We've lost pretty much, well, probably one of only two world-class players we've got in the squad.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, Ed, if you pull it back, we all knew he had the potential to be probably the best player in the world. In his, you know, and that brand, and he had the market value in the brand, and that was the thing. Hindsight being an exact science, you watch that documentary on Louis, he's one of those people, and I'm not saying whether this is right or not, it's just, it is what it is. He just wants to be famous and successful, and he loves the Instagram, and he's the sort of player who could be that brand building player. And Gloucester get nothing for it, do we? Because I don't think, unless there's some compensation or something.
Well, we're not going to pay him. I mean, that fundamentally get that money back. So that's probably something.
But
he
wasn't on a lot for us, really.
I think the only good positive, and Jim, I'll come to you shortly. The other positive is he's not going to another rugby team. So we're not losing him to like Bath or Saracens.
Rocked up at Bath or Saracens, gutting that would have been.
That's 3 years down the line. Jim, sorry, go ahead, mate.
No, I think, you know, like you say, we always thought we were going to lose him because he wants to further his career. And, you know, as a young man, you know, he might get a career ending injury, you know, next week. You know, you never know, do you? So if you know, Racing or Stade Francais or... you know, Montpellier or, you know, one of these big spending teams. Yeah. If they want to spend 800,000 euros a year on him or something ridiculous, then we're going to be, as a team, going to be like, well, it's a real shame to see you go, but there's absolutely no chance we can afford anything like that. I wouldn't have thought you'd want to go somewhere like Japan because that's a bit of a retirement home, isn't it? But, you know, again, they're throwing money at top quality players to encourage them in, so it makes sense. I think he's probably more likely, if he goes off and does it, whether he's a success or not, if he then comes back to the UK, I would hope, because he was quite thankful to Alex and to George for kind of letting him go, whether he had to buy himself out of his contract or there's been some little dealings or whether they've just been very gentlemanly about it and sort of gone, if that's really what you want to do, we'll let you go.
Yeah. I think we probably knew he was going anyway, didn't we? And
yeah, but then we've left on good terms. Yeah. So you'd hope in 2 years' time, Gloucester would be in a lot better shape.
Let's be honest.
A bit of money. And we can have him back at a salary that he's willing to accept, and he'll come back into that Gloucester fold because, you know, I mean, he is a Gloucester. He's not from, you know, he's not a Gloucester lad. He considers himself a Welsh boy, but, you know, he's gone through all that Gloucester development, hasn't he, through Hartbury and everything. So he must feel like
there's little romance left in sport, but it's nice to think that that might happen.
And I think the thing is the club of we criticize the club a lot. I think if it's not like football, is it? No one was ever going to give us a huge sum of money to sign him. It's not like we were getting a transfer fee. So the best thing in this situation they could do is probably this season's gone, isn't it? He could score 50 tries in the league. We ain't getting anywhere for it. Like Jim said, let him go on good terms. He's going somewhere where he is not going to come back and bite us on the arse, is he? He's not going to turn up at Kingsham and score a hat trick and destroy us now. Potentially in a few years, but we give ourselves a chance that he might come back. On the flip side, setting aside all the stuff, and we're all thinking now he isn't going to do it, seeing how many people sneer about it, I kind of really hope he does it. Can you imagine how batshit mental it is? Setting aside what you say, Ed, it might not be the biggest final in the world. It's one of the most watched. It's massive. Can you imagine if someone who's played for Gloucester somehow ends up in the Super Bowl? My brain will shut down. I won't be able to cope with that. It's just so mind-blowing.
It's a great point,
they've played
for
Gloucester.
Yeah. But you know, this is the thing. So this is a really interesting point, and it's kind of right. I know it's a bit weird, and I think we are kind of going into the realms of fantasy, as you said. Imagine what would happen if, right?
Exactly. But, I know that.
But I take this point, right? So if, for example, that happened and he becomes a success, whichever team he ends up playing for, I mean, just one little side note, there is a little bit of me, the mischievous bit of me, that kind of wants him to go to Green Bay because it's just funny to think of Rhys Samet freezing his ass off on the side in Wisconsin during the winter. But that's just my naughty side there.
Or someone really shit who've like not won anything. He's not going to get any.
Well, as a Detroit Lions fan myself, they're currently 10-3 up, I think, up in their latest playoff game. They've never won it, so that would be lovely if he went there. But anyway, so that aside, but imagine he goes to somewhere like, you know, whichever team, say, I don't know, Jets, the New York Jets, for example, the way Americans are about this sort of stuff, they follow a player's journey and they become a kind of obsessed with that thing. It's not unreasonable to suggest if he was a success for that team, we would suddenly have thousands of
They love a sporting underdog. One of the things I love about American football is the documentaries and the stories, and they tell them so well. It will be this boy who played, they'll probably call it Rigby or something, and like Gloucester, even though there's Gloucester in America.
He played rugby union in Gloucester, England.
It, like you say, Ed, there's a chance for an exposure.
From a small
and also,
village in Wales called Cardiff.
There's something very English about us saying, you know, we're all go off, live your dreams. As soon as he goes to live his dreams, I'm going to swear. It's like, oh, fuck him. Let's hope he dies on his ass. Now he's left. It makes no odds to us how well he does. So actually, I hope he goes over there and he breaks the records and he blows it out of the water. Because if someone is going to do it, can it be someone who's played for Gloucester so we can get behind him and go, that lad, I've seen him play rugby. He was bloody good at it. It's nice to see him. It's such long odds. I'd rather go, he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And I know Snowy, just glad Snowy's not on it because he would completely piss on my non-cynical bonfire. And it's one of the only times I've not been cynical in my life. So
I know, it's weird. Yeah. I don't like it. It's scary.
I know, I don't like this side of me.
He's not the only player, is he? He's not the only player going. We've got
Malinder, who actually
Harry Malinder's going as a punter kicker.
And he's probably got a better chance. He's probably got more chance because all he's got to do is get on the pitch and kick the ball really far.
Really good at.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
he wasn't that fantastic at rugby. Well, he's a damn sight better than me, but you know. He's made that decision that he's gonna have a go. I mean, God, I'm not sure. I mean, I'd be happy with the salary, obviously. But just to come on, to kick a ball, to then go off again.
I know, I find that weird. Do you remember the room?
I can't think of anything worse.
Russ, could you go and live in San Francisco and the training isn't that hot. Like, his training is quite intense. So actually, you'll get in shape. But all we need you to do is, it'll equate to about 10 minutes of playtime, is walk on a field and kick the ball really far. That's all we need you to do. I don't know. I will give you £5 million a year for it.
As in the final aside on this whole topic around NFL, because I know that not a lot of people aren't interested in it, but the other side of this is just to say that kickers in particular, yes, there is a bit of jeopardy here, but kickers generally are the ones that at the end of the day will get that moment of final glory, because they'll be the guy who slots the extra point.
It depends around laces out.
Yes, and that was the other thing as well. I did like the fact that literally the only thing that any British person knows about American football and kicking comes from an Ace Ventura movie.
My final point on this is if American football ever starts to embrace the box kick and this international selection criteria kicks off, as a club, we are buggered, aren't we?
Are we going to be the next franchise?
We could,
yeah.
I just love the idea though. Imagine that, right? So next year there's a rule change in NFL and box kicking's allowed, and Re-Summit just goes, no, fuck it, I'm coming home.
But can you imagine, like, all our fans are like, why are all these American coaches here?
Yeah.
Just like getting really excited by box kicks.
Suddenly George becomes the most successful NFL coach in history.
Oh my God. We have gone down a world of whimsy. But
Bill Belichick is gone.
Could you imagine the only way, like, actually, like, let's take this whimsy. We as a group joke that we want shot of him, but we can't ever get rid of him because we've got no money. Could you imagine, Alex, the New England Patriots have been in touch. They want George and they want to give us $20 million for him. And we think that's great. And then he wins the Super Bowl because the box kicks the thing. There we go. There's my fantasy finally gone.
There's your fantasy. Yeah. Well, you know, but to be fair, as Russ, as you know, me and you are going to go and watch George Skivington and Jim, I think, as well. We're going to go watch George Skivington.
Go away. I was feeling. All right. Can I, my final rant. Right, so to take me back to miserable gear and piss on my, like, happy-go-lucky bonfire, I haven't been able to see much rugby this year. Being a dad and adopted dad, I won't go into it, but it's challenging. It's hard. I don't get a lot of free time. I've been really looking forward to the England A game because I haven't seen a lot of rugby.
And it's Portugal, really exciting.
And it's Portugal. I thought it'd be a good game of rugby. Portugal have been really good to watch. We'll pick some young lads in England, probably chuck it around, try something new. It'll be a real palate cleanser for a man who hates box kicking, forward driven, boring rugby. And then literally, like, my first message, and it was a long day as well. I've been in loads of meetings. And the first message I saw was you sending me one, was George Skivington was at the England A. Honestly, I nearly cried. Just like, you're like, oh, going on that day out with you boys. I was really looking forward to it. Probably won't be driving. I can have a couple of beers. And now, what have I got to look forward to? You know, I should have just gone to a couple of Gloucester games. Yeah.
Just get a couple of beers, right? Yeah. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine. It'll probably annoy me even more because they'll play really attractive rugby.
Sam Vestey's the backs coach, isn't he? Sam Vestey's the backs coach. So you'd expect Sam Vestey to, the way Northampton are playing. And just one final note, actually, Jim, we'll talk about quickly that. What an incredible victory for Northampton away at Munster. Wow.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I was getting reading your messages. So I was like, oh,
it was so funny.
And obviously there's a huge love in, isn't there? Because I was at a party last night, so I didn't get to see it. Drinking Vimto. Oh God. That's another story. but yeah, it is. And I am a little bit tired. I know you're definitely very tired, Russ, of the Munster loving by the commentators.
So it wasn't, it's not that, like, I have against Munster, if you took out the commentary, the story about Munster, I'd have nothing against them. On paper, they're a team as a Gloucester fan, if you discount the Miracle match, which is a big negative against them, obviously. They're a team I should like. passionate fans, hardworking Hoggraff, but the commentary, and Ed hopefully will back me up on it, it was a particular low last night. Dominic O'Callaghan justifying everything.
Oh my God.
And even, I can't remember his name, the Irish. So Finn Smith lines up to kick a drop goal, and it's a long way out. It seemed quite unlikely, and it is the most disparaging, disrespectful rugby commentary I've heard. And I can't do the sarcasm he put in it. Just he went, "Oh, Smith with the drop goal. Oh, he thinks he's Ronan O'Gara." And 5 seconds,
nails before, it from
50
meters.
Oh, he's kicked it. Oh God, I feel stupid. And well,
it was, what was lovely about it was that the pin drop silence
when they score,
when Northampton scored at the end to get going the lead in the try. Inject that into
what I want to set aside is, like, so the commentary annoyed me. There were some awful ref decisions. That knee to the face was never a red, and of that. But what was impressive is Finn Smith, just for me, you look at him as a 10, and in that cauldron, I think he's a young lad. He managed that game so superbly, like, really grown on me as a player. I love Marcus Smith, but Finn Smith's got to be in the equation as an England 10. Yeah. Because and if you,
great that you've got such a great 10 that can compete with another great 10. I think you're absolutely right. Put him in that squad and he can make Marcus even better.
Agree, Jim. But also, they're different tens as well, aren't they? You could have Marcus Smith run the show, and you're like, we need to close this game out, get Finn on. But also,
you could very, very not conservative, because I think the way Finn Smith plays, and particularly in this Northampton team, is he's a very expansive 10, takes it to the line, really does do a lot of really good work. And you could bring Marcus Smith on to go, do you know what? Tiring defence, spot a gap, do something a little bit out of the ordinary. And, you know, they really will do. I think there's definitely going to be a Smith at 10.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a tough call. And then my final one was just, I think you made this point, Ed, is like, you watch that game and you think, that's what I want Gloucester to be. Oh, yeah. Just like, minute winning at Thomond is another level, but just have that edge to go away and be bloody hard to beat and bloody minded, because Northampton, like, as soon as that red card came on, you were thinking that's a game, but they just did so well to stay in that game. And I really regret, I hate that Courtney Laws is he was superb in that game as well.
I do think there's an element though with Courtney Laws, and it's difficult. Yes, he's playing probably the best rugby of his career at the moment at times, but is there a freedom about him that he knows this is it?
Yeah, but I think it's more generally Northampton are just Phil Dowson, like, because they were dreadful again at one point. And
last year they were awful. They were really poor.
He's done so many good players. I mean, I used to hate Furbank. He's superb. Freeman's a brilliant. They've got so many good players in that team.
I think there's a lot to like about Northampton at the moment. The style of rugby, I think, in particular, is a real. It's very refreshing to see when you look at, say, the teams that have been successful in England over the last couple of years have played very, very sort of staid, conservative rugby. And to see a team actually succeed with a very expansive, exciting style of rugby. I mean, obviously, they haven't won anything yet, and that's probably the caveat to this. But it is good to see. So, I mean, long may it continue from an English rugby point of view. And if Gloucester can be even close to emulating what they're doing at the moment, that would be a really good, bar to aim for. I think that's about it for this week. Thank you very much. We've rattled through a lot. We've got Sale next Sunday, and then a big gap, because then I think the only game then between, well, the only guaranteed game, I should say, between then and the end of the Six Nations is the Exeter Cup game.
We've got a friendly against Bath.
We do have a friendly against Bath, but I can't be asked. Although it was a fiver, wasn't it? Wasn't it a ticket, a fiver or something like crazy?
Yeah, but it means going to Bath.
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. We may need to do that. But anyway, so not a lot of rugby now for Gloucester in the next couple of weeks, but we will be talking about other things. So obviously the Six Nations, England A versus Portugal, and our adventure over to Welford Road. And then we will be talking obviously about Gloucester's hopefully successful win against a successful game against Exeter in the Cup. Anyway, thanks very much, guys. All the best, and we'll see you soon.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.